This is Betty Trunell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. Our guest today is Mr. O.T. Banton. I believe your friends call you Jack, Mr. Banton.
Yes, that's right. I got that nickname when I was 21 years old, and it's been with me now for 61 years, I believe.
Oh, good. Many of our listeners will recognize Mr. Banton as the editor and chief author of the recently published History of Macon County. But writing is nothing new for you, is it, Mr. Banton?
No, I was in newspaper work 52 years, 15 years on the Milwaukee papers and 37 years on the Lindsay Shop chain at Decatur.
So you've been a newspaper man all your life?
Well, yes.
Now, I believe you came from this area, though, didn't you, originally?
Yes, I lived on a farm when I was 17 years old out near Mount Zion, and attended school in the village of Mount Zion in those early days. My newspaper work was started in 1923 when I graduated from University of Wisconsin in journalism and got a job on the Milwaukee mm-hmm. Journal. I was on the Journal about 7 years and then was with this Hearst paper up there for about a year. And then for the last 7 years in Milwaukee, I was on the Milwaukee Sentinel.
Well, those were interesting times in Milwaukee,
yes,
weren't
yes.
they?
On the Sentinel, I was City Hall reporter for quite a period, and in that connection, I got well acquainted with the city officials, including in particular Dan Hone, who was socialist mayor for the entire period that I was on the Milwaukee papers. I also got acquainted with Phil La Follette and other Wisconsin governors. Phil was quite an interesting fellow. We newspaper boys used to write some stories about him. Sometimes our editors like to take pot shots at Phil. And we wrote some rather critical stories about him when he was governor. I remember one time I had written one of that kind, and the next time I saw him at Madison, he shook his fist under my nose as though he was really very angry. And then about the time I got ready to stammer some kind of apology or whatever I might have had in mind at the time, he stopped shaking his fist and burst out laughing. Well, now that method of handling newspaper stories that you don't like too well seems to me a better technique than Herbert Hoover mm-hmm. and some Governor Walter Kohler, later Wisconsin, and some other high office officials that I have known in my newspaper career. A fellow that did perform like Phil did on that occasion, you just couldn't get too mad at, mm-hmm. and you might even not be quite so rough with it the next time you wrote
right.
a story about it.
He was an astute politician.
It was good technique, I thought, yes.
Well, your legislative writing there led to this other job, didn't it?
My legislative writing job there started when I was on the Journal, and I was sent over to help cover the legislature for 1 week, and the boys who were the political writers on the Journal in those days assigned me to cover a hearing before, I believe it was the Judiciary Committee of the Illinois or the Wisconsin Legislature, on a series of bills that the socialists and the left-wingers, the progressives up there in Wisconsin, had before the Wisconsin Legislature to try to set up a lot of city-owned power. Not power plants, both production, especially city-owned distribution systems. Mm-hmm. And that hearing dragged on for about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so I was a rookie at that time, of course, but it was a very interesting series, and I guess I did a fairly good job of covering it. At least I wrote a Sunday story out of that the editors pulled out and used on as a page one banner article that Sunday. Mm-hmm. So for a cub reporter on the legislative scene in Wisconsin, I thought I was getting a pretty good start there. Well, I had occasion to cover a few governor's press conferences up there when Walter Kohler and when Phil LaFollette were governors. So my 18 years of legislative writing for the Lindsay Schaub chain of five daily papers was not entirely new to me, and I had occasion to get started on that. That was in late 1948, and Dwight Green was just going out of office at the end of that year. Adlai Stevenson came on and was in governor during the first session of the legislature that I covered.
Now, I don't believe you told us how you got from Wisconsin to Illinois.
Oh, yes. Ed Lindsay, who was top editor on the Lindsay Schaub chain of papers, had me write a few articles. He had, I guess, seen some of my writing. I don't know. Anyway, he asked me to write some articles on Wisconsin politics, which they wanted to use in their Sunday papers down here. I did one on the LaFollette's up there. I did one on the Socialist National Convention that I covered in Cleveland while still on the Milwaukee papers. And that was a very dramatic thing, and one of the most interesting things that I think that I covered in my entire newspaper career. The convention was held in the Cleveland Auditorium, and the socialists, Norman Thomas was then sort of perennial candidate for president of the socialists, and he was there, and Dan Hone was head of the Milwaukee delegation that went down there. And they had a very dramatic convention in Cleveland. There were about 1,000 delegates there. And they finally, in a battle over some resolutions that the left wing of the Socialist Party brought in, and that the right wingers saw they weren't going to be able to head off, the right wingers got up and walked out and went down the street to the old Hotel Hollanden in Cleveland and held a rump convention. Yeah. Now, whereas the socialists prior to that, under both with Eugene Debs and later Norman Thomas as their candidate, had been polling more than 1 million votes in the national election for president, after this split in Cleveland during that happened in that convention, Thomas got, I think, just a little over 500,000 votes, and their national presidential candidate vote just kept slumping off from that period. So it made, it was quite a breaking point for this Socialist Party nationally. And I did an article on that Mr. Lindsay used, I think a full-page article.
Then he wanted you to come here and work for him.
Yes. I had been coming down, my wife and I and our little daughter had been coming down here every year at Thanksgiving time to see Mother, who lived out in, she was a widow then, lived in Mount Zion. And Ed told me to come in next time I came down, he wanted to talk to me. And so he wanted to know if I was interested in the job, but I had to get my wife's permission on that. And being a Wisconsin girl, that wasn't easy. But they made me an offer that
she couldn't turn down either.
That she couldn't turn down either, and so we had moved to Decatur. Mm-hmm. If I had tried to move her somewhere else now, I'm sure I'd have a divorce on my hands. She likes Decatur now very much.
Yeah, that's great. Well, now you've had an interesting career here in newspaper work.
Yes, I really have. The first 10 years, I was city editor on the Review. Had a staff at that time of five reporters, I believe, and two photographers. And that was, I was city editor there during the period of the Second World War. And most of our older reporters were drafted or volunteered. So we put out the paper in that period. That paper was put out by, as I termed it, the old men and the girls. And about time I'd get a girl reporter trained so she was of some real usefulness, she'd marry a second lieutenant, and he'd be transferred to San Antonio, Texas, or somewhere, and I'd have to start all over again, training another girl reporter. Well,
then the man came back.
The man came back, and I took advantage of that. I always liked writing better than editorships anyway, although editorships usually did pay better. So we made one of the more experienced reporters city editor, and I became legislative writer for the Chain of Five Dailies then, which had a circulation of, I think, around 200, total circulation, about 200,000. So I covered the legislature for all the legislative sessions for 18 years. And that also involved covering the important news out of the offices of all the state officers, including the governors, and covering the governor's press conferences.
What were some of the outstanding stories or features? You were on some of those commissions too, weren't you?
Yes. I had written so much about highways and highway problems that when Governor Kerner came to appoint a 15-member Highway Study Commission in 1963, I was made one of the seven public members. There were 15 legislative members on the commission, and inasmuch, at that time I had just gone on semi-retirement with the papers here, and on the theory that I would probably be less subject to political and business pressures as chairman of that commission than any of the other public members. He didn't want a legislative member as chairman. At his insistence, they elected me chairman, first chairman of that commission. The commission is now known as the Illinois Transportation Study Commission and is still operating.
Now, I believe
a highlight of that experience was that late in 1964, there was a delegation went mostly from Chicago to Europe to study mass transit as it was being handled in 15 large European cities. I was invited to go along by virtue of the fact I was chairman of that Highway Study Commission. We visited 15 European cities in 10 countries in 19 days, which meant a lot of airplane hopping. But the program over there was very interesting. The professor of transportation at Northwestern University had arranged this trip over there for that group, and he had set up conferences with the Ministry of Transport of each of those 10 countries. They entertained us by having these conference sessions, and usually that included a luncheon. And some of those luncheons were quite elaborate.
You were well entertained.
I know in Paris, luncheon was in a very fine dining hall down the street, about not more than three or four doors from De Gaulle's palace. And we were in, I particularly remember Bern, Switzerland, and Berlin, and London. We got well acquainted with the two men over in Europe who promoted and got started the system over there that's now well known as the Trans-Europe Express. It was a passenger train service jointly owned by about five European countries. We rode on that on one occasion. That operates right on time, and if you aren't there in time to step on, you wait for the next train.
You had some other activities too, I believe. You were in connection with the Conservation Commission.
Well, not with the Illinois Conservation Commission, no.
This was another.
But I did cover quite a lot of activities of that commission and its efforts at getting a better program of parks and recreational areas for the people of Illinois. Mm-hmm. At that time, Illinois ranked about 49th among all the states in acreage of state parks for recreation and other interests of aesthetic interests of this people. And I did write a series of articles at the suggestion mm-hmm. of some of the members of the legislature on the Illinois state parks. I took my wife along on those. We visited all the state parks at that time.
Well, we owe you a lot in Macon County.
Well, Macon County, that was, we now have, we're one of the five counties in Illinois now that has what they call a county conservation district. It's a buying up of acreage, green areas and historic sites and other interesting old buildings or what have you, for future use and enjoyment of people of the county. If the counties that aren't doing that, all these green areas are very rapidly being subdivided into little septic tank residential colonies. Mm-hmm. And as I said in our campaign to get that, a favorable referendum vote on that, that any industry mm-hmm. Looking over Macon County and other counties, I'm sure would finding a program like that here. Now they bought 2,500 acres and developed it to quite an extent, and of course planned much further development. But that program in Macon County has, I'm sure, made every industrial, business, and residential property more valuable. Mm-hmm.
It really has enhanced and, this area.
It should be attractive to industry that was looking for a site for a branch plant, mm-hmm. or it should help hold industries in Illinois that might think of possibly moving somewhere else where their employees wouldn't have that kind of, of outdoor attractions.
Well, Mr. Banton, you must have had a chance to meet some very interesting personalities in connection with your work in Springfield.
Yes, there were quite a number over the 18-year period. I recall in particular Paul Powell and Orville Hodge. both of those were good friends of mine, in spite of the what happened to them in their late careers. Powell was Speaker of the House of Representatives in Springfield, started in that capacity under Stevenson's administration. Paul was very loyal to Stevenson and was very effective in getting Stevenson's program through both of the legislatures that Stevenson had programs before. In those days, the legislature met every 2 years, so each governor then, with a 4-year term, would have two legislatures to try to get his program adopted by. Paul had been a member of the legislature for about 5 or 6 terms then, and was a very, very able fellow, very effective, and he could always swing a whole batch of votes for any bill that he'd get out on the floor and make a speech in behalf of. And that enabled Stevenson to get some of his pet bills through that he wouldn't have gotten through if it hadn't been for help he had there from Paul. Well, Paul was also Speaker once when the Republicans had a majority. The majority won in the lower house. And Paul's getting to be Speaker again that time was quite dramatic. But it ended up with him being speaker, getting one vote from a Chicago Republican who later got himself in other trouble. But then I think Paul was speaker three different times. And in those days, the state officials threw a party for the press correspondents over in Springfield. Mm-hmm. The first one I attended was the one that Paul gave. The correspondents later, we had a program of having a party then later for the governor and the state officers. But I just wanted to say on behalf of Paul was that he was pretty old-fashioned in some of his political ideas. He believed in the spoils system, and he believed in being rewarded for some of the things he did both for and against bills over there for people who were willing to pay for it. That's how he accumulated the fortune that he accumulated, and that was part of which was found in the shoebox in Springfield in his hotel room. Well, when I went in, the story appeared in the paper that I was going into semi-retirement. I got the nicest letter from Paul Powell that I got from anybody.
Yeah.
Now that was the kind of fellow Paul was. That's why he had so many friends. Mm-hmm. You couldn't go down to his hometown in Vienna, Illinois today and say derogatory things about Paul Powell without them throwing you out somewhere. Mm-hmm. Well, Orville Hodge was from Granite City, and his folks were quite good circumstances down there. Had a mercantile business. And his wife, folks also were rather well-to-do. And now Orville operated in pretty lavish fashion. And we press correspondents didn't suspect anything wrong about Orville because we knew he was wealthy and could afford to do these handsome things he did. He always gave us nicer Christmas presents than the governor did. But we figured he's just that kind of fellow, and he wanted to be popular with the press insofar as he could. We wrote bad stories about any of the officials that got themselves in real trouble, and they knew that we would. But so that's why we didn't suspect anything wrong with Orville until it
came
broke
out.
Open all at once.
Well, you have had a really exciting career then in connection with your newspaper work.
Yes.
But I'm sure you've had honors and distinctions. Why don't you tell us about some of the awards you've had?
Well, I think number one would be winning a silver gavel that was given by the American Bar Association early in 1960. For the newspapers and other news media that had performed best, their committee thought, in translating to the public efforts by the Bar Association to improve our selection of judges in the various states and court administration. Now, in most states, the Supreme Court had both judicial and administrative powers as related to the various levels of their court system. But that took time from the Supreme Court justices that it shouldn't have been taken. And under the court administration program the Bar Association was sponsoring, they would have a court administrator in the state, and it would be his job to handle administrative chores that were rather heavy. There was held in the old Edgewater Beach Hotel in Chicago in late 1959 a conference on judicial selection and court administration, the first such national conference that had ever been held. And attending that were, as speaker in particular, was a retired Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in Great Britain, and also the top man in the Supreme Court in Canada. Lord Goddard was a man from London, a very interesting old fellow, and they made some very fine talks to the group. And out of that, I was the only downstate newspaper man invited to attend that conference as a participant.
Very good.
All the Chicago papers, all four of the Chicago papers at that time, had men who were invited to attend as participants. So there were five newspaper men participants in that conference, and I didn't try to cover it as spot news at the time at all. But later I wrote a series of full-page articles of the papers here used Sunday on that conference. Well, some of my lawyer friends in Chicago saw this series and suggested to the editors down here that they submit that in this American Bar Association's Silver Gavel Award contest. And they got up a brochure of these articles and entered them. And we were one of four papers in the United States that won Silver Gavel Awards in that American Bar Association contest. And I was quite elated when the then president of the American Bar Association went out of his way to let me know that had there been only one Silver Gavel awarded,
it would have been yours.
That we would have been the one that got it.
I believe you did get your own gavel to keep.
Yes, inasmuch as I had produced all of the material that the Lindsay Shaw papers entered in that contest, they not only gave this a gavel to the newspapers, but they gave me a personal silver gavel, which I still have.
I'm sure you treasure that, of course, right. Well, now, let's go back to your history of Macon County for a minute.
Well, I'd be glad to do that.
Because I'm sure people will want to know the outstanding points that you remember, especially from that. We could sit here all afternoon talking about that history, but I'm sure we could.
Could
we give a few highlights of points that you think are especially interesting?
Yes, I'll try to do that. Now, to me, early history is more interesting than history that I'm closer to in present-day life. And so I find quite intriguing the beginnings of white man's program here in Macon County. Now, the first log cabin built here was built in 1820 over south of the Sangamon River near what is now the site of Mueller Lodge. It was built by a gentleman named Downing, whose profession was trapping and honey gatherer. Mm. I presume he robbed bees' nests to be found in trees and sold the honey. Well, his wife got scared of the Indians, and she was looking for a chance for them to move back down south. See, southern Illinois was settled before central and northern Illinois, and there were more Indians up here than there were down in Vandalia way. Another family came here in 1824, the John Ward family. And so Mr. Downing sold his cabin to the Wards and moved his wife back down to Vandalia. Mm-hmm. Well, the population built up rather slowly here in this immediate area, but by 1829, there were enough people here that they decided they wanted to form a new county. It was a long way to travel to Vandalia, or to the state house in those days, or to even to Shelbyville, the county seat. See, Shelbyville used to be a very large county and included the area that is now Macon County. They sent a delegation of three down to Vandalia to the legislature in January of 1829 with a petition to try to get the legislators down there to authorize formation of a new county. They had no trouble getting it through the legislature, and the bill that provided for formation of a new county up here also stipulated that the name of the county be named Macon, in honor of a distinguished North Carolinian, and that the county seat be named Decatur in honor of Stephen Decatur, mm-hmm. of naval fame and early American history days. It also stipulated that until a county seat site was selected, that county government affairs be conducted at the home of James Ward, down near Mount Gilead Cemetery, what's Mount Gilead Cemetery nowadays, and which at that time was the intersection of two stagecoach routes, one from Terre Haute to Springfield, and the other from Vandalia on south up through past Decatur here and through this area on towards Chicago. And inasmuch as the log cabin of a settler down there wouldn't have been big enough to have an election, which they had during that period, and a meeting of the jury, especially grand jury, it's assumed by early historians that all that business was transacted in James Ward's blacksmith shop. Mm-hmm.
Where is that in terms of modern Decatur?
Down near Mount Gilead Cemetery.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, there were two settlements here in the early days, the Ward settlement south of the river and the Stevens settlement north of the river. The Stevens Creek out here was named for the Stevens family in there, for that settlement. Now, the Stevens settlement is mostly people from the east. The Ward settlement is mostly people from the south. The Stevens settlement, however, did include the Lincolns, who lived here for a year, and the Hanks family. But outside of that, that settlement was nearly all Easterners. And the two didn't get along very well. When they had one meeting to try to pick a county street site, at which they got into a fist fight, and one of them, the settlement people, was so badly beaten up that he died. So things were a little bit rough in the takeoff here for Macon County history. The first sheriff was named Warnick, and the Warnick family there's still Warnicks here, mm-hmm. and there's Austins and others of the early Smiths and others of the early families. Long Creek there's some very interesting people out of Long Creek. One was the Baker family out mm-hmm. there, and the Reverend Martin Baker was possibly the most outstanding minister that's ever lived in Macon County. They had him give the benediction, when Theodore Roosevelt was here for the dedication ceremony in starting Millikan University. And the community built up fast then. The railroads came here in 1854. There's quite a rivalry between whether the Illinois Central would get here first or the Great Western, which later became the Wabash, would get here first. And the Wabash beat out the Illinois Central by about 4 months. The building of the bridge across the Sangamon River down here in the Stevens Creek area was quite a project in those days. A lot of pick and shovel work and scrapers drawn by horses and that kind of thing. They had a German crew on the east side working at it. They had to import a lot of this help in those days because there weren't enough settlers here to build up crews like that. And they had a crew of Irish on the west side. Mm-hmm. And they got into some battles a time or two. And one time there was a report that the Irish had killed about a half a dozen of the Germans, and the sheriff got out and
had an international war.
Wild chase there, and yet that proved to have not been quite as bad as originally pictured. Well, things build up pretty fast after the coming of the railroads. Up until the railroads came, the community was pretty much just a local settler's inner circle. They couldn't produce any grain or meat, livestock, for shipment to Chicago or St. Louis, because it was just too costly to get them there over the kind of roads that they had in those days. But with the coming of the railroads, that whole picture changed, mm-hmm. and the community grew from then on very mm-hmm. rapidly.
It's all opened up then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the future of Decatur, Mr. Banton?
Well, I am among those who are not interested in seeing Decatur grow too fast or too much bigger than it is now.
You like it the way it is.
Future generations may say I was very old-fashioned in that idea. But rapid population growth brings rapid. Some attendant headaches
right.
that are very expensive and that change the social pattern of an area later mm-hmm. In a way that it's questionable whether it's an improvement over the life that the community had had prior to those kinds of changes.
I'm sure you must be enjoying your retirement. Your work on the history was part of that, wasn't it?
Yes. The sale of that book landed on me much more heavily than I had anticipated. But we've sold over 3,100 copies now, and we'll have less than 50 left.
Well, good. I thought we'd better mention that it's available for anybody who might be interested.
Yes, I have copies. Anyone wants to call up, I'd be glad to autograph one for
if
them.
If there are only 50 left, that means that they'd better work a little fast.
There's some talk of a second printing, but nothing definite has been decided about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what else do you do in your retirement?
No.
Do you do any newspaper work now, or is that past?
No, I don't. I did write quite a number of articles for a magazine over in Springfield for a period of several years, but I haven't written anything for that now for some time either. My hobby is fishing, and of course, the kind of Minneapolis winter we've had here this winter, that fishing is no good, not even ice fishing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too doggone cold to
mm-hmm.
go ice fishing this kind
yes,
of
right.
this kind of weather. I might let you in on a little secret, I suppose. Yeah. I'm writing another book.
Oh, great! And what is it?
It's highlights of 52 years of newspapering.
Oh, great! And when is this coming out?
Well, I don't know that it'll ever come out. It depends on how good a job I do on it. I have two purposes in mind, three purposes in mind, in fact. One is to just write it for the fun of the family that I can leave it to. Another is that if somebody thinks it's good enough to publish and sell, that could happen. And the third reason I had for writing it was to get out from under cabin fever in this Minneapolis winter we're having here.
Where do you ride? Do you go someplace to ride, or here?
No, I have a den upstairs.
Upstairs, uh-huh. But it gives you a little
yes.
outlet for.
You see, over the 52-year period, I kept scrapbooks of the more interesting
mm-hmm.
News stories and feature articles that I wrote in my newspaper work, and those are my source in writing this highlights book that I'm working on now, and I'll have to do some cross-checking to get some dates that I need and a few things like that, but for the most part I'll be able to write this right out of the newspaper.
Well, I'd like to be one of your first readers when your book is available.
I'll be glad to let you read a few chapters anytime you want to.
Well, very good. Well, it looks as if you may have retired from your active newspaper career, but you're still leading a very full and active life.
Well, I think I should be thankful that I've had as good health as I've had, and 82, I'm still able to shovel snow and do a few things like that that probably I oughtn't to do.
Well, I'm sure.
My grandson's been rescuing me from most of the snow shoveling.
What about your children? You have grandchildren?
Yes, I have four grandchildren. And
do they live here in Decatur?
Yes. Well, two of them do and two of them don't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you're very fortunate.
I also have seven great-grandchildren.
Well, great.
So that makes me feel real old.
Well, but you have a lot of fun with them, I'm sure.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Benton. This has been a great experience, and we appreciate your sharing everything with the people of Macon County.
Well, Macon County is a great, very fine county, and I hope that I've contributed a little bit to
it. Well, you have contributed a great deal.
Maybe in future.
Fine, thank you. You've been listening to the reminiscences of Mr. O.T. Jack Benton. This is Betty Trunell for the Decatur Public Library.